tonight. We are in the book of Numbers. Yeah! All right. Numbers chapter 1 is where we find ourselves. You know, we have been traveling through what is called the Pentateuch. We are in the fourth book of the Pentateuch. The Pentateuch are the first five books of the Bible, but they're the five books, as they're called, of Moses. If you notice, the fourth book of Moses, that's what it says in my Bible, the fourth book of Moses, Numbers. Before you get scared, now, if you've already read, you might be scared. You didn't come to church to do math. This is a book for the accountants among us. Those of you that like numbers, you know, this is your book. No, actually, the book ought to be probably titled something like The Wilderness Wanderings, because that's really what it's about. It's about the 40 years in the wilderness. It's a book with the richness of God's provision, of God's grace. I mean, when people say, you know, that there's no grace in the Old Testament, when I read the book of Numbers, I see a God of amazing, amazing grace. And the children of Israel, time and time again, are, you know, just rejecting the Lord. The children of Israel are just totally, you know, rebelling and disobeying. I mean, they got themselves into what we'll see as the wilderness wanderings because of unbelief. And they're in that place because they didn't trust in the Lord. They didn't obey the Lord. And interesting, we capped off the book of Leviticus last time with a little survey of the book of Hebrews. We kind of finished up, had a small chapter, so we did that in Leviticus, and then we looked at the correlations in Hebrews. Well, it's Hebrews 3 where it talks about how the children of Israel, you know, wandered in the wilderness, and that all of those that disobeyed the Lord died in the wilderness because of unbelief. Unbelief. And it's interesting that the author of Hebrews in Hebrews 3 ties the word unbelief together with the word disobedience, because they're one and the same. Unbelief is disobedience. Disobedience is unbelief. Not trusting in the Lord, not believing in the Lord. And so we come to the book of Numbers. Before we jump into the book, remember that obviously Genesis was about the beginning. Genesis was about the nation of Israel that was, you know, really being formulated. I mean, God calling Abraham out, then God giving him a promise that seemed to be impossible, that God was going to give him a child, he being at that time, 90 years old when God finally fulfills the promise. He was 75 when the promise came. 90 years old, or 100 years old, his wife being 90 years old, the promise comes, and, God just does a miracle. And then bringing about the 12 tribes, so the establishment. But Exodus picks us up with the children of Israel in Egypt, not in the promised land, because in Genesis, obviously, one of the most important parts of Genesis is that God promised not only Abraham a nation, but a land. And that nation's going to dwell in that land. That nation's going to multiply and become a great nation. And they're going to be his nation. And he gives them a land, not just any land, but a specific place on the planet Earth called, as we know it today, Israel. And so he gives it to them. It was the land of Canaan in their days. And that the number of their descendants would outnumber the stars of heaven, outnumber the granules of sand on the seashores. And seeming to be an impossible thing, but it was in Egypt where they multiplied. It was in Egypt where they grew, and it was in Egypt they grew so strong that the Pharaoh realized, hey, they're getting bigger than us, the Egyptians. And so they were then put into some very, very serious oppressive slavery and brought into slavery, and God raised up a man named Moses. And so Moses comes on the scene. Now, obviously, this being the fourth book of Moses, and Moses is really the key figure in the book of Numbers. And so I think it's important to be reminded of who Moses was and all that Moses did. Remember that Moses started out there in the book of Exodus as a baby in a time that was great oppression. His mother puts him into the Nile River, and the Pharaoh's daughter finds him and takes him into her own home and raises him up. And so Moses' life really can be divided into three parts. Moses' life is divided into three periods of 40 years. The first 40 years Moses spent in Egypt, and he spent under the roof of the Pharaoh. He was really being groomed to be the Pharaoh. He was, educated in the best schools. He was a rich boy. He had everything, you know. He was a son of royalty. And God began to minister to Moses after he was, you know, approaching the 40-year mark of his life. And God began to show him, and he saw the oppression of the children of Israel and the slavery they were in, the bondage. And God called him, or he sensed that call of God to rescue the children of Israel, to be the deliverer. Moses is known as the great deliverer. And so God begins to work in his heart, but Moses, in his own strength and his own power, goes out and tries to accomplish what God had called him to do. But God called him to do it a different way. And so he goes out, and we know the story. He kills a man, and he buries him in the sand. He's protecting one of the Hebrews. You know, he kills an Egyptian, and finally he gets in trouble. He flees, and so he spends the next 40 years, from the year 40 years old to 80 years old, in the wilderness, in the desert. That's where he was. He was a shepherd in the land of Midian. He married a Midian woman. His father-in-law was the priest of Midian. And so there he is, you know, probably thinking, my calling's over, my life's over in a sense. It's all, in a sense, over. I'm just going to be this shepherd here in this wilderness. And it was after 40 years of that, God appears to Moses in a burning bush and shows himself to him and reminds him of the calling, and calls him to go back to Egypt and to bring the deliverance of the children of Israel, to the promised land that God had originally called him to do. And so it's like the 40 years in the wilderness was the undoing of the 40 years in the world. Egypt's clearly a picture of the world and was very worldly, and he was educated, he had all this, but he learned the faith of God. He learned to trust the Lord. And there was something else he learned very practically in that 40 years in the wilderness. He learned the wilderness, because the last period, the third period, would be 40 years in the same wilderness, not with sheep. I think at times he probably wished he was back with that little flock of sheep. But we're going to learn tonight, as we calculate the numbers, we're going to learn tonight that he is going to be a shepherd, not of sheep, but of the children of Israel, for 40 years as they wander through the wilderness and the number of them could be up into the 2-3 millions of people, and they are what I would call a murmuring people. That's who they are. So moving from the book of Exodus, when we went through Leviticus, we saw that Leviticus was a book about worship. Leviticus was a book about the tabernacle, the priesthood, sacrifices, feast, how you'd come to God and worship. And God was establishing for us. Now, Leviticus doesn't cover really any time. Leviticus is a book that's just kind of the handbook for the priest, meaning, you know, there wasn't 40 years of the, you know, chronological history of Israel in Leviticus. From the end of Exodus to the beginning of Numbers is going to be 1 month. So if anything, Leviticus was about a month's period of time. God was establishing the worship. And now when we get into Numbers, we're going to see how God is going to work in their wanderings, how they are going to wander. But there's a few things that we notice when we read Numbers. And the name Numbers speaks of order. It's math, it speaks of order. And that's what we will see. God is a God of order. God is a God that doesn't just send his children, you know, out in the wilderness and say, okay, I want you guys to start hiking over to the promised land. and just however you get there, whenever you get there, I don't care, just get there. You know, but God knows to move this amount of people through that treacherous terrain. And I've been in some of the areas that they traveled. And as we go through, I'll get some of the slides out, some pictures that I've taken as I've traveled there in the Negev Desert and that area in the region of that world. It's desert. And, you know, it's not a place that I would want to spend, you know, a week in a tent in, let alone 40 years in a tent. It's a hot, hot area of the world. Remember, this is right by, you know, right, if you would, down south, if you would, of the Dead Sea. Dead Sea being the lowest part on the planet Earth. And if you've ever been to the Dead Sea, you know that the Dead Sea is just dead. It's dead. It's maybe called the Salt Sea. It's 32 or 33% salt content. Nothing can live there. No living thing, animal, plant, nothing lives in the Dead Sea. It's low, it's hot, it's dead. Well, from the Dead Sea, as you travel down south, you just keep going, and it's desert and more desert, and you get down to Egypt and to Saudi Arabia and to the mountain regions of Moab and modern-day Jordan, and you get down to the Red Sea, which we know the children of Israel made their way through. So they're coming up from the Red Sea up to the land of Canaan, and they're going to be just kind of wandering in that area and region of the world. And I'll tell you what, it's a desolate, desolate place. But God is there. And that's what we will see. And God is a God of order. And he's going to bring his children through in a miraculous way. And so, you know, I get excited when we, you know, we're starting here Numbers. There is a lot in this book. You know, and the more I study it, obviously, the more I realize, wow. You know, I'm like, okay, you know, teach Numbers. Let's, you know, survey it real quickly, get through it. And you find that, you know, if you can get over reading all the names and numbers, and you'll have to forgive me tonight, I'm not going to probably do well with the names. So if I mess them up, well, then, you know, you can do better, maybe. But not me. But, you know, we might call it, and I said this before, you know, the book could be called Numbers and Names. But there's so much more there. There's so much more there. And so the beginning of the book, there is some numbers. Let's jump into it. It says, now the Lord spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai. He's still at the base of Mount Sinai. In the tabernacle of meeting. Now the tabernacle has been erected. On the first day of the second month, in the second year after they had come out of the land of Egypt. So this is 1 month after the tabernacle had been set up. Exodus chapter 40, last chapter of Exodus. Exodus chapter 40, verse 17 tells us there of the time the tabernacle was erected, and it was erected on the second year of the first day of the first month, and here we're on the second day of the month. And so one month exactly. And so the Lord, notice again, it says that the Lord spoke to Moses in the wilderness. Where? In the tabernacle of meeting. Now, again, why is it called the tabernacle meeting? Because it's where God meets his people. It's where God meets Moses. And he says to him, verse 2, take a censer of all the congregation of the children of Israel by their families, by their father's houses, according to the number of names, every male individually. Well, that sounds like quite a task. Every single man individually from 20 years old and above, all who are able to go to war in Israel, you and Aaron shall number them by their armies. Wow. And then he says, and when you, well, let's just stop there. You know, so God tells Moses, here you are, you're seeking the Lord. You're the tabernacle of meeting. It's been now erected. I mean, it's all new in there. You know, you're a month into this. And God says, okay, Moses, this is what I want you to do. Yes, Lord, servant listens. I'm here. What is it you want me to do? I want you to go and I want you to number every single man of the age 20 years old or 20 years and above every one of them individually. Get out your notepad. He didn't have a calculator. You know, and begin to count them. That's what I want you and Aaron to do. Now, that doesn't sound real spiritual to me. You know what I'm saying? It's like, that just sounds like a lot of work. Now, I don't know about you, but when numbers are in front of me, and big numbers, my mind just shuts down. It just like, just twist up, it fries, it's done. You know, and I'm good like, you know, 1 to 10. But, you know, after I just, but this is what God says. Now, again, I love that Moses is a man of deep obedience. He doesn't quite understand what's in front of him. But he knows this. God does. Do you know that? We must know that. We must understand that though we don't know what's in front of us, we need to understand and know that God knows what's in front of us. You know, the saying is, we don't know the future, but we know him who holds the future. Moses didn't realize where he was really going, how hard it would be. But God is not just numbering the people. It's not like, I just want to know how many are there. But he's going to order them into armies. Note that. Note, he says here, the 20 years old, verse 3, years old and above, all who are able to go to war, you and Aaron shall number them by their armies. So we saw worship in Leviticus. We saw deliverance in Exodus. We saw the beginning and the creation in Genesis. Here in Numbers, we're going to see the building of a military. God is going to make his people strong. He takes them, think about this, they're slaves. That's who they were. They were a nation of slaves. He delivers them mightily and miraculously through the land of Egypt. And he brings them into this place of freedom now. But now he realizes they're vulnerable. And he doesn't leave them that way. Now he's going to order them in ranks. He's going to put leaders over them. He's going to bring structure. And he's going to set them up. And so that's what chapter 1 is about, is the taking the census. And verse 4 says, And with you there shall be a man from every tribe, each one of the heads of his father's house. So from every tribe, I want you, as you number, I want you to appoint a head. Now, God gives them the heads. And he goes on here. He says, these are the names of the men whom you who shall stand with you from Reuben. And then he's going to give the name. And again, I'm not going to try to read all the names, but notice here we have verse, obviously, the 12 patriarchs, if you would, are dead. And so it's the head of that tribe, of that family. Reuben, and verse 6, Simeon, verse 7, Judah, Issachar, verse 9, Zebulun, and down. Notice verse 10, and the sons of Joseph. And so now we're going to find that the tribes here, you know, there's 12 brothers, right? 12 tribes. And we're going to have 12 tribes when we're done. But he's going to take out a tribe, and he's going to split a tribe into two. He's going to take out Levi, because Levi won't be numbered. Levi won't go to war. Levi will be the priesthood, and will be those that will ultimately carry the tabernacle and all that it has. And when they travel and things, and we'll look at that here, it's coming up. But he's going to split Joseph. Joseph's two sons are going to become two tribes. This is why sometimes as you study the tribes of Israel throughout the Bible, at certain times you find Joseph in there. Other times you find Ephraim and Manasseh in there. And other times Levi is put in there. And really, there's 13 tribes as you split the sons of Joseph. Notice it's Ephraim is mentioned before Manasseh. Remember in Genesis chapter 48, Manasseh was there the older, and Ephraim was the younger. And when Jacob came to, bless the children of Joseph after Jacob had been brought to Egypt, and he was going to come and bless the children of Joseph. He switches his hands, and Joseph says, "No, Dad, put him the other way." He says, "I know what I'm doing." So this was something that was in God's prophetical calendar, that he has going to put the younger over the older. And that's exactly what he says there. Genesis again, 48, if you want to read that maybe later. Then we have Benjamin, who is there, verse 12, Dan, verse 13, Asher. Now notice there's a name that's listed, Gad and Naphtali. And so the first 15 verses there, you have the tribe and then the leader that is going to be appointed. Verse 16, these were chosen from the congregation, leaders of their father's tribe, heads of the divisions in Israel. So I love this. These were chosen. Now, this idea or this phrase here, chosen, could also be translated called. God called them out. Again, in the Word and in the history of Israel, as well as in the New Testament in the church, we never find God, or we never find man just raising up himself. Saying, I'm a leader. I'm appointing myself as a leader. We will find when men do that, God will judge them severely. Remember, maybe you don't, but read here through Numbers and you're going to come to find out. There are going to be others that, you know, the rebellion of Korah, if maybe you remember that, and we'll study that. But men that will write, "Who are you? Who are you, Moses?" Murmurers, complainers. In the New Testament, it's called those that cause division. And God's real serious about the issue of division in the church. And the usurping of authority and the overthrowing of authority. As we know in our modern day, church splits. This is how church splits happen. You know, that someone says, "We don't like the way that the leadership of the church is going." And so sometimes even amongst the leadership, usually, the lower level of leadership, "We're going to break off. We're going to go do our own thing." But God sets an order up that's very important. But notice this, that God appoints. If you remember back to the priesthood, God appointed the priest. And God made that very clear in his word, that he's the one that appoints. God is the one who raises up, the God who is the one who brings down. So these are the ones chosen. And notice here that they are the leaders of their father's tribe. So they have a sphere of leadership. They have been designated, this is your area of leadership. Sometimes leadership can go to people's heads. And, we have to be very careful. And, it's like you get a sphere of leadership and then you feel like, well, I should be the leader, over that and this. And you start self-appointing yourself. And we got to be very careful. And so God, again, and I just want you to see structure here. God's establishing, because in the New Testament, he does the same thing. In the church, he establishes, the church leadership. And it's very, very important for us to see. And so these are heads of the divisions of Israel. And Moses and Aaron took the men who had been mentioned by name, and they assembled all the congregation together on the first day of the second month. And they rehearsed the ancestry of their families and their fathers' houses according to the number of names from 20 years old and above, each one individually. Wow, that was a long process. But notice what they're doing. In front of the whole congregation, they're setting up the leadership. So everyone knows who the leader is of the tribe of Dan, who the leader is of the tribe of Naphtali, who the leaders are of these different tribes. As the Lord commanded Moses, so he numbered them in the wilderness of Sinai. So God commands him, he does it. And now much of the chapter here is on the listing of them. And again, just notice verse 20, Reuben, and it goes on to give the listing there. And then it's going to give the number that are under the tribe of Reuben, verse 21, it gives the number there. And then verse 22, Simeon. Verse 20, 3, the number there. Verse 24, Gad. And on he goes. And he goes through the 12 tribes as they're laid out here for us and gives the number of each of them. Verse 44, we'll pick it up. These are the ones who were numbered, who Moses and Aaron numbered with the leaders of Israel, 12 men, each one representing his father's house. So all who were numbered of the children of Israel by their father's house for 20 years old and above, all who were able to go to war in Israel, all who were numbered were, so here's the final number, 630,000, excuse me, 603,550. And if on your way in, I passed out tonight a little handout here. You know, I figured, hey, we're doing numbers. You might as well have numbers. This looks like some report I get, you know, here at the church on, you know, where we are financially or something. But these are all of the numbers. And notice there's two census. There's the first and the second. In chapter 26, and we've got the verses there for you. In chapter 26, verses 5 through 51, there's going to be another census taken. Now, why I want to point this out is because they're going to lose numbers. They're not going to gain because of their disobedience. And really, tonight is the night of numbers, if you would. But then we're going to get more into, you know, the wilderness wanderings and those kinds of things. But really, there's only two times that the children of Israel are numbered in the book of Numbers. The first time, as you notice, it totals 600,500 and whatever. You can read that. And then you notice the second column there, and it's all added up for you. Basically, it's lacking almost 2,820 people. So they start out with more than they end with, which shouldn't be. They're to multiply. That's what God's promise was. But because of their disobedience, remember God says to them, okay, if you don't trust me, you don't want to go into the promised land, fine, you won't. And because they cried to God, oh, our kids are going to suffer. If we take them in there, they're going to be slaughtered. I mean, let's go back to Egypt. Why all this? And God says, okay, you're all going to wander in the wilderness for 40 years. And when the very last one of you is dead, I'm going to take your kids into the land. And so it was just kind of a waiting period. And as the kids went into the land, they multiplied greatly. So you can see that there's been a lack, not a multiplication of people during this time. And verse 47, let's go on. But the Levites were not numbered among them by their father's tribes. For the Lord has spoken to Moses, saying, only the tribe of Levi you shall not number, nor take a census of them according among the children of Israel. But you shall appoint the Levites over the tabernacle of the testimony. Watch this. Over all its furnishings, over all that the things that belong to it, they shall carry the tabernacle and all its furnishings, and shall attend to it and the camp and camp around the tabernacle. And when the tabernacle is to go forward, the Levites shall take it down, and the tabernacle shall be set up, and the Levites shall set it up. The outsider who comes near shall be put to death. So here's God's establishing some more order. And his order here that he's establishing is that the Levites are going to be from the tribe of Levi, they're going to be the ones that are going to camp around the tabernacle. They're going to be the ones that when the cloud moves, remember the cloud by day, fire by night moves, they move. They're to pack up. Remember the tabernacle is this portable tent. They're to pack that up and to move along with it. And anyone else says, hey, let me help you out. Now, remember a few stories in the Bible? 1 Samuel chapter 6, 2 Samuel chapter 6. Both of those chapters of the Samuels speak about it. Remember the people of Beth Shemesh, when they were bringing the ark through and it stumbled and they tried to grab it and they were killed. And we all look at it and go, wow, God's mean. But that's the neat thing about studying through the Bible verse by verse, to realize and to get the background. Listen, God says no one touches that but those that I've appointed to touch it. And so, again, there's a certain place, a certain sphere for certain people to be in. And obviously the tabernacle being holy. And so, and we will see that Aaron is to be, and Moses is to oversee all of the, you know, packing up of it and everything. And so there's even leadership structure there. So God's giving them order here. Again, God is going to bring them through. And so when the tabernacle goes forth, the Levites will take it down and they will set it up again. Verse 52. Then the children of Israel shall pitch their tents, everyone in his own camp, everyone by his own standard according to their armies. So everyone's to pitch their tent in order. And God's going to give it here in chapter 2. This idea of standards is like a banner, a flag. And every tribe will have its area and its place, and all of it will be based on where the tabernacle is. So the tabernacle will be set up, and then everyone will start setting up camp from there. And so God is giving them this order. But the Levites shall camp around the tabernacle of the testimony, that they might... that there might be no wrath on the congregation of the children of Israel, and the Levites shall keep charge of the tabernacle of the testimony. Thus the children of Israel did according to all that the Lord commanded Moses, so they did. So here's what God's saying here. Again, he's saying, I'm going to have all of you camp in your place. But you know what catches my attention here? And I already know this, but the word tent, set up your tent. Just a reminder that for 40 years, they're going to be living in a tent. I don't know about you, but I like camping a lot. I do, for like a day. I like motorhomes better. I like fishing. I like the outdoors. I'm an outdoorsman. But after a while, you know, you're like, it's dirty. I mean, you know, you just don't have a microwave that you just go over to. And, where's the Del Taco. I mean, you know, it's just like, it's hard work to camp. It's, you know, when I come home from camping, I need a vacation. You know, you ever need a vacation from your vacation? It's hard work. And there's nothing like a hot shower after you come home and you get in your shower. Yeah, you sleep in your bed, first night back in your bed. I know for me, when I travel to Africa and we go into the remote areas, to the bush, it's like camping. And, you know, there's no running water and the whole thing out there. And, when I come home, wow, that first shower, oh, it's wonderful. Hot water. It's actually hot. It's great. And, I spend hours in there the first time. No, but a long time just soaking it in, just taking it in. And you know, 40 years. And they're going to set tents up, and they're going to take tents down, and they're going to pack it up, and they're going to haul it, you know, over here in the wilderness, and then they're going to stop, and they're going to rebuild the tabernacle and set that whole thing up and set all the camp up. And then God's going to, we're going, and, you know, we're going to tear it all down and go. This was going to be their life. And God was trying to get them to depend on him and a life of faith. But really, it wasn't God's ultimate plan. It was because of disobedience. The Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, every one of the children of Israel shall camp by his own standard besides the emblem of his father's house. They shall camp some distance from the tabernacle of meeting. And so God is going to set up the camp now. Now, chapter 2, again, I like details. And I find this stuff interesting. And I can picture it in my mind. But God is now not just saying, okay, you know, Judah, go over there, and, you know, Issachar, get over there, and just find a place. I don't know about you, but if I was Moses, first of all, I'm thankful I'm not Moses. Because a few million people is not my desire to be a shepherd of. You know, we've got enough here. You know, people say, well, the church, you know, how big is it? You know, it's like, the bigger, the more problems there are. You know, everyone wants bigger, bigger, bigger. But bigger doesn't, you know, I want a bigger house. Well, yeah, it's more to clean, you know. I want a bigger yard. Well, you know, you can just, if you're looking for something to do on Saturday, just go over to my mom's house. She's got an acre, plenty to do. You know, it's like, we want bigger, but bigger means more work, more problems. So this is a large camp of people. And, you know, remember, they've only calculated the men that are of 20 years and older. So, you know, if you calculate the women, calculate the children. And this isn't even talking about, you know, the mixed multitude. There were others that were amongst them that weren't actually Israeli men. And, you know, the calculations go up, as I said, to 2 to 3 million people. So there's a lot of people. And, you know, how do you order that? I mean, how do you march? How do people not get trampled? Well, God is going to lay that out here in chapter 2. Notice what verse 3 says. He says, on the east side towards the rising of the sun, those whose standards of them facing are the forces of Judah shall camp there. And then again, he lists them. Verse 5, he says Issachar. Verse 7, he says Zebulun. And then in verse 9, notice he says, and all who were numbered according to their armies of the forces of Judah. So he's going to group them in threes under one head. So Judah's the head. I just put together a simple little slide up here. Now, I know that for those of you that can't see good, you won't see it because it's small. But I had to fit it all on one. But on the other side of your sheet, there's actually a less detailed graph that you can look at on the one on the bottom there, the Israelites line and marching here. But notice that God is going to have them camp on the, as I have up here, the east side, the south, the west, and the north. And so as we read here, we see that the first one is Judah, which would be the head then. And then comes Issachar there in verse 5. Verse 7 is Zebulun. Go to verse 10, and you're now those that are on the south is going to be Reuben. And there in verse 12, Simeon. There in verse 14, Gad. And then again, notice verse 16, all those who were numbered according to their armies of the forces with Reuben. So Reuben has those three, his tribe, the other two, and they're all under his leadership, if you would. But verse 17, it says, then the tabernacle of meeting shall move out with the camp of the Levites in the midst of the camp as they camp. So they shall move out everyone in his place by his standard. Just look at the order there. Everyone in his place by his standard. But notice what God's doing here. So when they march, this is their marching order. And so who's at the front of the pack? The lion of the tribe of Judah. Don't forget that's who Jesus is from. And the warrior, Jesus, when he comes back, he's the lion. He's on the front. He's on the front lines. And so Judah's out there, and there's six tribes, including himself, behind him. And then there's the Levites. Notice what's right in the center, what's protected, militarily protected, the house of God, the priesthood. And so we have the tent of meeting, the Levites. And then going on, verse 18, the west side, notice there is going to be Ephraim and then Manasseh and then Benjamin. Now, notice that those are, if you remember about Genesis and Ephraim and Manasseh, obviously Joseph's sons, and Benjamin and Joseph being, you know, the beloved sons of their father. And so they're together as well. And then as you keep moving on here, you come to verse 25, the standards of the forces of Dan shall be on the north side. And with Dan, there is Asher and Nephtalim and then, you know, verse 30, 31, you have the they're all again with the forces of Dan according to their standards. So verse 32, then we come. Oh, before we do that, just one slide, kind of a picture for us tonight, if you can see it from where you're sitting. But notice the tabernacles in the center. The white tents are the priesthood. That's Levi. Remember, Levi's to be camped around. And then you can see they're camped. And if you can see beyond that, and that's Mount Sinai, and you see beyond Mount Sinai, they're camped all in their different tribes. You can't really see it, but it almost looks like smoke coming up. But those are the standards. They're like, you know, the banners that are up and showing, you know, what tribe is where. So again, you just see the order that's there. And then on the graph that I gave to you tonight, oh, I think I've got it up here. There's just another shot. But here on the graph, and this you have this on your page that I passed out, you can just again see where they're all camped out in, around the tabernacle in their tribes. And it says in verse 32, then these are the ones who were numbered of the children of Israel by their father's house, all who were numbered according to their armies of the forces. And again, it gives the number there, and we already looked at that in chapter 1, verse 33. But the Levites were not numbered among the children of Israel, just as the Lord commanded Moses. Thus the children of Israel did according to all that the Lord commanded Moses. Praise God. They need to keep doing that. So they camped by their standards, and so they broke camp, each one by their family, according to their father's house. So very orderly. When God said, started moving, they broke camp. They all knew where to be. They knew where to march. They had a leader over them, and they went forward from there. And so very powerful. Chapter 3, and we'll just finish with chapter 3, but this to me is just exciting. It says, now these are the records of Aaron and Moses, which the Lord spoke to him on Mount Sinai. And these are the names of the sons of Aaron. So now he's going to hone in on Moses and Aaron. Here are the names of the sons of Aaron. Nadab, the firstborn, Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar. These are the names of the sons of Aaron, the anointed priest who he consecrated to minister as priests. Nadab and Abihu had died before the Lord when they offered profane fire to the Lord in the wilderness of Sinai, and they had no children. So you remember that story where they died. Again, this whole idea of God, the worship of God, reverence towards God, fellowship with God, and not coming and doing your own thing. Nadab and Abihu, it said, had strange fire. They had those incense, and they just ran in, and they did something that wasn't allowed, and they thought that that was cool, that was okay. They would, in a sense, get away with that, or they didn't think anything of it, and God dealt severely with them. And you know, again, we think, wow, that's severe. But God is establishing an order of worship. And so they're not there. So actually, it's Eleazar and Ithamar who ministered as priests under the oversight of Aaron, their father. So again, they are under their father's oversight. Again, Aaron's the high priest, and these are the priests here that are under the oversight of their father. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, bring the tribe of Levi near and present them before the priest, that they might serve him. So the whole tribe of Levi is to be consecrated. They're to be under the leadership of Aaron, and they shall attend to the needs, to his needs, and to the needs of the whole congregation before the tabernacle of meeting, to do the work of the tabernacle. So these are to be consecrated for the work of the tabernacle. Notice they're to minister to the needs of Aaron and to the needs of the whole congregation. Also, they shall attend to the furniture of the tabernacle of meeting, and to the needs of the children of Israel, and to do the work of the tabernacle. And you shall give the Levites to Aaron and his sons. They shall be given entirely to him from among the children of Israel. So you shall appoint Aaron and his sons, and they shall appoint them as priests, but the outsider who comes near shall be put to death. Then the Lord said to Moses, say, now behold, I myself have taken the Levites from among the children of Israel instead of every firstborn who opens the womb among the children of Israel. Therefore, the Levites shall be mine, because all the firstborn are mine. On the day when I struck all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, I sanctified to myself the firstborn in Israel, both men and beasts. They shall be mine. I am the Lord. So what's God saying here is, remember back, and again, this is why we've got to know our Bible to really understand what's going on here. We're just kind of lost. But when God struck with the Passover lamb and the Passover angel, the angel of death, and the firstborn was struck if the blood wasn't applied. And when God did that, he said, I'm going to require the firstborn of animal and children to be mine to be consecrated to me. And earlier on, we saw in Leviticus how you can redeem the firstborn. Obviously, God isn't saying sacrifice to me your firstborn son. But what God is saying is he's saying consecrate him to me. And there was an offering that was given, and there was a redemption price that was paid. It was worship. And what God's saying is, instead of that, I'm going to take the, instead of all the firstborn of the children of Israel, and you give them to me, to what? To serve me, to be mine, to be used for my glory, for my kingdom. What God is saying is he's saying, I'm going to take the Levites instead. And, you know, this is powerful. At the end of the chapter, he will talk about the number of all the firstborn in Israel and how that numbered up to the number of the Levites, and the extra that was to be given would be then just could be paid with the ransom price or with the redemption, the redemption price. And so God is again consecrating these to himself. And I think that's powerful. And, you know, what's interesting to me is you have army and you have priesthood. That's what God set up here. He set up an army and he set up a priesthood. And you know what's interesting? When you look into the New Testament, you know what you and I see? We see that we are called to be a royal priesthood, a holy nation. And you know, we're a little different than Israel, aren't we? As the church. We're not called to go, you know, we're going to find, and you need to understand this now, as you travel through the Old Testament, you're going to find some bloodshed. And it's going to be disturbing. And you're going to see that it's a commandment of God to go in and to kill and to possess the land and to take the land. And it trips a lot of people up. But what God is doing, he's establishing a nation. He's taking back his land. He's establishing his people in that land. And to do that, he's going to need to use a military. But, you know, there are some today that think that we're still in the Old Testament. And, you know, God hasn't called us as a church to take out sword. I mean, remember what he told Peter in the garden. Peter, put away your sword. I don't need you to fight. Remember what Jesus told Pilate. He said, as Pilate said, are you a king? You know, he says, listen, if my kingdom was of this world, my servants would fight. But my kingdom is not of this world. And, you know, it's important for us to remember that. You know, there's other religions and you know, they get very violent. And, you know, even in under the guise of Christianity, you know, under the, you know, guise of Catholicism and Orthodoxy and, you know, the Orthodox Church and things. Listen, they will hire people to persecute and to beat. Many of the martyrs of the church were martyred by, you know, the leadership of under the Pope. Under, you know, I know people that live in Greece and grew up there and were, you know, in the Orthodox Church and born again. And the very priest of the church would hire men to beat this guy up because he became a Christian. I mean, these things still go on in the name of Jesus. So I know that you and I probably don't see that here in our, you know, city. But, you know, you look at the Crusades. And the Crusaders, and in the New Testament era, in the name of Jesus, people have murdered, people have killed. And you know, and they can look back and say, well, look at the Old Testament. Okay, look at the Old Testament. There was a military, and there was a priesthood. Then look at 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 9, where God says, in the New Testament, I've called you to be a royal priesthood, a holy nation, my own special people, which I've called out of darkness to proclaim the praises of him who's called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. We're called to proclaim the gospel. We don't have a holy jihad in Christianity. You know, and as you look at Islam, as you look at some forms of even Hinduism today, that there is persecution and there is violence and there is, you know, murder. That though we do see that in the Old Testament, that is not the call on the church. That is not our call. And I think that's an important thing to point out here. Because we are identified with the priesthood, with worshipers, with those that are ministering to people, with those that, and in the New Testament, let me make it real clear, with those that are preaching the gospel, ministering to the world through words, speaking truth, not forcing the hand of anyone, not getting angry, not using the weapons of the flesh, if you would, to try to accomplish the things of the Spirit. And so I find that to be very intriguing here as I look at this. And let's just wrap it up. And we, you know, again, we'll just kind of skim through some of these portions here. But the Lord spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai, saying, I'm in verse 15 now, number the children of Levi by their father's house. Now, again, he said not to number them before. But what he's saying is don't number them for war. Now he's simply numbering them for the priesthood. By their father's house, you shall number every male from 1 month old and above. Notice it's not 20 years, it's 1 month. And that's, again, because they're going to replace the firstborn that would be given from all of Israel. So Moses numbered them according to the word of the Lord as he was commanded. And these were the sons of Levi by their names, Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. So if you can pronounce those better, God bless you. But these are three important ones. And notice on the chart I have up there, you have it on your sheet. You'll see those names around the tabernacle. So look at the second box there, and in there you see those names. So these are the leaders of the tribe of Levi. So these are going to be the different divisions in the priesthood. And it becomes important because as we you just go on and read again a list of a lot of names and come to verse 23, and from the family of the Gershonites, were to camp behind the tabernacle on the west side, and you'll note that on the map there. But notice where they're to camp, around the tabernacle. But this part of the Levites under the Gershonites, they're to camp on the west side. And they are, verse 25, their duties of the children of the Gershonites, of Gershon, is in the tabernacle of meeting, includes the tabernacle, the tent. So this is when they're to move, when they're to travel. These guys are going to pack up this part. So they've got the tabernacle, the tent, the coverings, the screens of the doors, the tabernacle of meeting. So the main structure, they're to pack this baby up. Again, just notice the order. And again, he lists the different things that they're to be packing up, the altar and the coals according and the cords and this. And then you come to the Kohathites or the Kohaths, the family, verse 27. And again, it lists them in verse 29. It says, in the family of the children of Kohath were to camp on the south side of the tabernacle. And then verse 31, it says these are their duties, including the ark, the table. So they've got the inner sanctuary. I like this group. I mean, that's kind of like, you know, they're kind of special, if you would. They're getting closer to the, they're the ones that are going to carry the ark. They're going to carry the table of showbread, the lampstand, the utensils. And it goes on there to talk about what they're to carry. Notice they are to be under the direction, verse 32, of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, who is the chief over the leaders of the Levites, who will oversee of those who keep charge of the sanctuary. So he's to oversee the packing up. Chapter 4, we won't get there tonight. I want to encourage you to read on because it will talk about the packing up of the different articles there and the oversight of Aaron. The oversight of his sons there. And then you get to the last group there of the Merari's. They come from the families, and it just, again, lists their families, and then they're to camp on the north side, verse 35, and it lists what they're to get. They're to be those that are going to bear the poles and the stocks and the utensils and the outer court and the bands and all of the things. And we've gone through that in Exodus. And then you get to verse 38. Now, this, I think, is cool. It says, moreover, those who were to camp before the tabernacle on the east side. So because, you know, we're introduced to three groups and there's only, you know, three sides camped out. And it says here that Moses and Aaron and his sons keeping charge over the sanctuary to meet the needs of the children of Israel. Note that, to meet the needs of the children of Israel. But the outsiders who come near shall be put to death. All those who are numbered of the Levites with Moses and Aaron are numbered according to, and it goes on to give us the number there of the Levites and all of those. But notice who's to camp right in front of the east. Now, why is the east important? Well, that's where the gate is. You can't go into the tabernacle without seeing Moses and Aaron and the priesthood. So they're there to just watch over. They're there to oversee. And notice it says they're there to minister to the needs of the people. And so that's where their house was or tent was, if you would, and to be camped there. And then the rest of the chapter talks about what I've already discussed with you about the firstborn and being replaced by the Levites and then the leftovers, if you would, will be given through money. There in verse 49 says Moses will take the redemption money for those who were over and above those who were redeemed by the Levites. And so he gives the number there as well. And again, he simply closes with they did it according to the word of the Lord, and the Lord, as the Lord commanded Moses, so they did. And, you know, again, maybe for some of us this is laborious. For some of us, it's interesting. But again, it's foundation. And there's so much for us to learn. And let me just kind of close us tonight with this. God is a God of order. God has placed you and me in the place that he's got us. He's placed us under the people that are over us, whether that's a marriage, whether that's maybe a job, whether that's in the church. You know, whatever that is, you know, in a family unit, whatever that is, God's put us there. You know, and I'm reminded of what Paul the Apostle says to the Athenians on Mars Hill. And he says this, as he's preaching the gospel. He speaks of God, that he's not to be worshipped with man's hands. And he says in verse 26 of Acts 17, and he has made from one blood every nation of man to dwell on the face of the earth. And he's determined their pre-appointed times and their boundaries of their habitation so that they should seek the Lord in hope that they might grope for him and find him, though he is not far from each of us. You know, I think it's important for us to realize that God has placed us where he's put us, as Paul says, so that we'd seek the Lord. You know, we can be like the children of Israel, and they're going to do their share of grumbling. We can grumble and complain and be upset and not like where we are in the situation we're in. But God's put us there. Let us learn. Let us learn from the children of Israel not to do what they did. And, you know, Paul says to the Corinthians, and I want to read to you this, in 1 Corinthians 10. And listen what he said. This is concerning our study in the Old Testament and what we're to learn and what we're to kind of come away and walk away with and learn from. He says in 1 Corinthians 10, verse 1, moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be ignorant or unaware of our fathers who have gone under the cloud. That's the cloud in the wilderness. Passed through the Red Sea. That's the parting of the sea. They were all baptized in the cloud and in the sea and all ate of the spiritual food, the manna, remember? And drank of the spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. Well, we'll look at that in Numbers. But with most of them, they saw all this. They saw the miracles. But with most of them, God was not well pleased, for their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. Now, these things became our examples. So he's writing to us, the church, to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they lusted. Learn. That's what he's saying. Learn from the mistakes of others. And do not become idolaters as they were, as it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Nor let us commit sexual immorality as some of them did. And in one day, 23,000 fell. Nor, we'll look at all these stories, and some of them we've already looked at. And not let us tempt Christ as some of them tempted and were destroyed by the serpents. Nor murmur, as some of them also murmured and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition, on whom the ends of the ages come. Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. Let no temptation overtake him, but such as common to man. And but God, who is faithful, who will not allow him to be tempted beyond what he is able, but with the temptation will also make a way of escape that he might bear it. Now, that verse, verse 13 there, 1 Corinthians 10, most of us are familiar with. The context is this. Learn from the Old Testament. They're there to warn us, to rebuke us, so that we don't follow the same pattern. And then he goes right into, take heed, he who thinks he stands, take heed lest he fall. And know this, when you're tempted, that the temptation isn't too great for you. The temptations that we have, maybe it's in the place we are. We're tempted to murmur. We're tempted to rebel. We're tempted to, you know, lust after, you know, the word is the covet, to covet after other things. We're tempted. I want that. Why does he, why did he get that promotion? You know, why? And we're in all the, and we need to realize God's put me where I am. And I need to humble myself. And I need to serve. And I need to love the Lord. And he let God work all that out. And, you know, if I got a boss that I think's mean or a spouse that I don't like, you know, and thinks mean, and, you know, if you're a child hitting my parents and they, you know, pray for them. But God's placed you there for your growth, for your learning, for your sanctification. Don't miss it. See, we want to get out of the trial. God says, I'm going to give you the strength to bear up under it. Yeah, I'll make a way of escape so you don't fall, but that doesn't mean I'll take all trials away. And I want you to grow there, and I want you to learn there. I want you to be shaped there. And let us let God do that in us. And as we travel through the Old Testament, again, I want to challenge us here as we start this book tonight. I want to challenge us to read through Numbers. Please, you will get so much more to read and to study it and to understand it. As you do, God is going to speak to you. And it's like we're forcing ourselves to get in maybe sections of Scripture we never would. And as we do, God's going to shape your character and build things in you that maybe you never would have had built. Deeper things, like let's go deeper. You know, those of us that come out Wednesday nights, we're here because these are the true Bible students here. I mean, you guys sitting here right now, you're the true students. Well, let that the word have effect in us. Let it do its work in us. Because God has got so much more for us than, you know, our Sunday morning and our, you know, this and that and just, you know, our you know, hit and miss Bible. And God has so much more for our lives. And there's such maturity that's going to come as we allow the Lord to work. And so I want to leave us with that thought and just encourage us to seek God and to allow God to shape us and do what he wants to do in us. Amen? Amen. Let's pray. Father, we just thank you tonight for your word. And God, I just pray that you would open Numbers, God, to us and speak, Father, to our hearts and into our lives. And make us, Lord, a people that follow, Lord, hard after you. A people that come near, Lord, to you and close. We just, Father, bless you. And God, we just worship you. And we just ask that you now would be magnified in our midst, glorified, lifted up. And now, Lord, as we open up our hearts for communion and worship and prayer, God, we just ask that you'd have your way. That you would do your work, Lord, and we still our hearts before you. God, I just pray that you would just meet us here. Meet us here tonight. And deal with that which you need to deal with. We thank you, Father, and praise you. It's in Jesus' name.